Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this May the 14th on the West Coast, now May the 15th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome everyone listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and on BlogTalkRadio.com. Lots to talk about tonight, and we're going to get into some of the current events as we go along. But we want to continue with the topic that we discussed last week, and we're going to take this to another level. And I suppose it would be appropriate for me at this point to invite tonight's guest into the conversation. And we'll sort of do a recap on last week's show, and very briefly, of course, and then go into an expansion of that. And our intention here is to talk about consciousness and ways that you can tap into it, your own consciousness, for instance, and then ways to expand it. And so with that, I'm going to invite back to the show last week's guest and my regular Friday night guest and co-host and our resident science advisor. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and his name is Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show this evening.
Hey, Don. Thank you very much. It's good to be here, as usual.
Well, it's good to have you here, and it's always my pleasure, sir. We get into some really good conversations. Now, last week, Jim, as I just mentioned to the listeners, we talked about consciousness, and I gave a couple of examples at the end of the show and told folks, for instance, they could focus on clouds. It's a technique some call cloud busting. I basically don't even affix a name to it. What I do is I look at clouds and I visualize them leaving or going away, transforming into something else. And clouds pretty much know how to manifest and move from one dimension to another. Just because you don't see what causes a cloud doesn't mean what causes it isn't there. And or that it has no direct impact on you other than possibly blocking the sun when it is there. So we use that as one example. That can be advanced in stages to handle chemtrails. And we asked some people to let us know, and hopefully before the end of the show, we'll entertain some calls. Not yet, but a little bit later on in the show, we'll make an announcement where folks can share with us. Now, I've gotten some email from some listeners who assured me that they were going to go about the exercise that we presented last week, and I got some email responses regarding the feasibility of what we described and the results that they were getting. And people were surprised that they could do this. People had every intention of doing it. Many had no doubt that they could do this just by the description that we gave. And certainly one could go back and listen to the archive of the show. And if you are subscribed to the BBS archives, then you can actually download all the shows on BBS Radio, not just Evident Footprints. But you could go back and listen to the show and review the instructions. But we're going to talk about that some more tonight in terms of thinking outside the box and applying your intention and responsibility to it. Despite what others may say is impossible or others will try to prevent you from doing, these things are quite simple, aren't they?
Are you asking me?
Well, yeah, rhetorically, I'm asking you, yes. I mean, this is not a very complicated process.
No, it's not complicated, but it does require a certain fiber of character, a certain determination, and a certain belief in the plausibility of what we present. If you have those things, you can do pretty much anything.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say belief. I would say expectation. And it's just because we're not telling something to people that we know is not true or might not be possible. Whether they can do it or not depends on, their belief system. If you're living in a belief system of predetermined ideas and concepts and conclusions about the way things are, then you're probably not going to be very successful in the beginning until you let go of judgment and fear and guilt and all of that, because it's totally harmless. In fact, you can use this in a very powerful way, and we can manifest new things with this. This is the whole point of us discussing this. So last week we sort of ended with this exercise in working on clouds or chemtrails, using the mind, using the thought, directing energy, visualizing clear skies, and you do that directly by looking at a cloud, starting with a small cloud, or a brand new chemtrail that hasn't had a chance to spread out yet and expand and masking the sky. That's a simple way I know a beginner can actually work on this and see some success. And then as you get better, you can deal with the larger clouds or the larger chemtrails. Anything you want to say on that?
No, I think that covers that part of it pretty well. What I did want to do, with your permission, is to just jump back for a minute to the other subject that we covered last week, which was the consciousness in plants. And
yes.
And the reason I would like to do that is not that I'm even going to dwell on it, but just I think it's important to point out, I know that I've discussed this with people many times, and they're very surprised when you start to direct their thinking towards this, because, people cut their lawns, they trim their hedges, they do all kinds of things involving plants, and they just think of them as something that's just kind of there. They don't realize that it's a little personage that they're interacting with.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start to realize that it's conscious, I'm not saying you shouldn't cut your lawn or you shouldn't trim your bushes, but it just gives you a whole different way of looking at that. And the reason I bring it up at all is because plants are obviously one of the kingdoms of nature. So the four recognized kingdoms is the spirit world, the animal world, the vegetative expression of creation, and then the rocks, minerals, earth, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for this retrograde delivery is because of the fact that I want to stress that, we're trying to promote the idea that consciousness is not limited to just what we consider sentient beings, like human beings. If plants are conscious, so are rocks. So is the planet. So are all these different things. And the point is that if you can direct the shape of a cloud with your intention, or you can divert a storm, as you did, this is, in fact, a very worthwhile demonstration of the ability of man to interact in a very intimate way with all of nature. Now, this comes under a couple of different descriptions. where I started with this many, many years ago was that I had a preoccupation with telekinesis or psychokinesis, depending on how you want to term it. Mm-hmm. And I believe that cloud busting or moving a penny across the table without touching it is really an expression of the same thing. Your mind isn't doing it, you know, directly like flexing a muscle or whatever, but you're interacting with agents that exist, which are not necessarily visible to us, but which are under our control, and you have to get familiar with that before you can do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a good example of that. I remember when I was in grade school, I had a friend who could wiggle his ears. And it was the most comical thing you ever saw, you know. He would do it at all different times and upset the whole class and what have you. And I just really wanted to do that because I enjoyed being a class clown myself. The problem is, you try that, sit in front of a mirror and try that, or try something equally unusual with your body, and you start to realize very quickly that if you're not familiar with the musculature and the control of those muscles and how to use them, it's the darndest thing. You can't do it until you gain a certain amount of control, a certain amount of familiarity. Another good test is lifting one eyebrow. A lot of people can't do that. But the muscles to do it are there, and you have to become familiar with them. And then you can extend your consciousness to a different act or a different, a different type of control over yourself, and you start to get the idea. Well, it's the same thing with the yogis. Yogis gain control over their internal organs. The heart, for instance. They can slow their heart rates down. They can drop their blood pressure. They can drop their body temperature. They do all this because they go inside themselves and become familiar with how they actually work. And what all this tells you is that we have to stop considering ourselves to be a meat machine with a name, because you're more than that. And until you start to realize that you're more than that, it's very difficult to do some of these other things, because you've had this idea that the person you identify as you has been drummed into your head that it's just the guy you see in the mirror, just the guy or gal that gets ready for work in the morning, goes through the rigmarole of their day, comes home and gets some rest and does it all over again. And if you really buy into that, it's very, very difficult to get unentwined from that type of a perception. So one of the things that you need to do is to start going inward. And the reason I say this is because the more familiar you become with yourself as a total being, the easier it becomes for you to realize that you have an energy component which you're not using. And that energy component is directly subordinate to your intention. You can't use it until you become conscious of that connection. Now, there's a lot of different ways of doing this. I mean, I first discovered certain aspects of this when I was involved pretty heavily in martial arts. And I began blocking kicks and punches that I never saw coming because my energy field saw them coming. And that changes you. When you actually see that happen to yourself, it changes you because you become aware that you're something more than the meat that you're standing in. And another way you can do this is with Tai Chi, but a lot of people probably don't want to go that far, you know, especially starting out. What I would recommend anybody that's interested in doing this, you should get a book called Unitrol, Hidden Power of the Mind. It's a step-by-step course that teaches you how to go inward, how to consciously disconnect from all of your bodily functions until you really come to the realization that you're a thinking, I don't know what you want to call it, a thinking agglutination of energy.
Yeah, perceptive.
And perceptive, absolutely. And once you can do that, then you're well on your way to the next step, which, believe it or not, is what the ancients used to call magic or working miracles. Everybody and anybody can do that, in varying degrees, of course, depending on your expertise, on your personal power, and on all of the other things that we described earlier. But intent is a very, very strong component of this. And also, your belief in the ability to do it. You have to work up to the point where you really believe it. For instance, I've seen so many times where a guy learns to punch through a pine board and, in a karate, exposition. And, you know, then somebody says, well, let's see you do two. And then he'll do two, and they'll make it three. And when it gets to four or five, he says, well, I can't do that many. Well, actually, he probably can. The point is, he doesn't believe he can, and so he doesn't. And it's that type of thing that you have to master in order to proceed in all of this. And Don, with your permission, I had two really astounding, I mean, they even astounded me, when it happened to me. I had two very astounding, experiences, back in the 60s and 70s that, I would like to relate, not because I want to blow my own horn, but just because I want people to understand there's really no limit to how this works, if you have the courage to pursue it. And there's little things I can try and explain as I go through this as to what you need to do, but if you don't start doing these things and don't start trying and start perceiving yourself as an expression of the Creator who has been made in a similar likeness and has similar abilities, then under those conditions, you'll just always be a meat machine that you perceive yourself to be. And so, Don, if you like, I'll relate these two short little anecdotes.
Yes, and when you're finished, I want to make a comment on something that you described early on in your description of all these different realities of physicality. So, sure, go ahead.
Well, the first thing that happened was really an amazing story. I was practicing this kind of stuff, and I was doing it quietly, you know, without making any big deal about it, because I really wanted to learn, you know, what the limits of myself were. And during that time period of my life, I was involved with a business that necessitated me attending a convention in Chicago. And myself and about six friends who were also involved in this business all flew up to Chicago together. And this one fellow had an extremely lovely wife. She was just the sweetest girl, and just had one of those attitudes about life and everything that you just know that he had captured a real gem. And I was very fond of her. I've known her for a couple of years. The second day that we were at the convention, she was looking really strange and started to complain about pains in her abdomen. So they took her to a local doctor, and he examined her. And I didn't know this at the time. I found out after she returned from the doctor. And apparently she had had some kind of a problem where earlier on, about a year and a half earlier, she had had one ovary removed. And whatever the problem was, whether it was endometriosis or, some other condition in that region, it had started to affect the second ovary. And she really wanted to have kids, and this doctor said he recommended she leave right away, go back to New Jersey, and see her own physician who was intimately more familiar with the thing. And so her and her husband got ready to go, and me and one of the other fellows took her to the airport. And when I saw her getting on the plane, and she had tears in her eyes because she was really concerned, and it really, really moved me. And I put an impression into the universe. And what I mean by this is it's a combination of a mental picture combined with an emotional message. There's no point in reciting words because it's not how that mechanism works. You need the intent. You need the picture, which describes what you're seeking, and you need the emotion to power it. And I just pictured her in absolutely perfect health, and sent with that picture the love that I felt for her. And I released this into the universe, and once you do that, you don't think about it anymore. You just let it go. And you let it go with the realization that it is done. You don't say, gee, I wonder if that's going to work, or maybe I should concentrate, or any of that. It has nothing to do with that. Anyway, long story short, she gets back to New Jersey. We got a call the next day that said that her own doctor examined her, and she was absolutely perfect, couldn't figure out why she even bothered to come home. Now, that, was a real interesting experience for me, and it gave me a lot of self-confidence, but you always have that nagging little feeling in the back of your mind, well, maybe there was nothing wrong with her in the first place. Maybe she just had gastritis or something. Maybe the doctor in Chicago misdiagnosed. Maybe. It's hard to believe in stuff like that, even if you're instrumental or even if you're involved in doing it. But this second thing just blew me away completely. There is no answer to this second thing, except the fact that something unearthly occurred. When I was going through college, I worked part-time as a night watchman down on the docks. And very often I would show up around 4:30 or so when the shipyard was closing, and I'd make my rounds. And I had befriended this stray dog who had grown up there since he was a puppy, and they had a whole fleet of dogs down there, but this particular one was a very cute little animal, and we just had some chemistry between us, and he used to follow me everywhere, and we became really, really close friends. So this one particular day, there was another tugboat that belonged to a different company anchored down by the end of this dock that protruded out into the Hudson. And the tide was out, or going out, and the boat was below the dock. Now, the dock was an extension, a wooden piling extension that went out from a seawall, which was about 14 feet high, and of course it depended on where the tide was, but overall it was about 12 or 14 feet high. So I walked out to the end of the dock, the dog followed me, and when I got to the end, I made a little jump, it didn't seem like much of anything, down onto the gunwales of the tugboat, because I had to go down and make sure there was no water in the bilges and stuff. And the puppy decided he's going to do that too. And I just thought he would wait up on the dock. But I no sooner got on the boat than I saw him leap, and he literally missed the target. He fell in the Hudson, and started paddling around frantically looking for a place to go. And I kept calling them to come to me because I could grab them by the nape of the neck and pull them out of there. But I guess instinctively he thought if he head back toward the direction of land that he would find a way out. Well, of course, that was impossible because of the seawall. And make matters worse, he kept paddling under the dock where I couldn't get him no matter what happened. And I could hear him splashing around, so I climbed back up the ladder on the side of the boat, jumped back over onto the dock, and by listening, I was trying to figure out where he was going so that I could find a way to get down to him. And this went on for some really frantic minutes. I mean, I don't know exactly how long. I'd say maybe 15 minutes of me running up and down the dock trying to get to this poor animal. And finally, it just went silent. And he was only a young dog, so I just, you know, assumed he got exhausted and went under. And I sat down on a couple of tires that were out there on the end of the dock, and I was just thinking about it in a stunned way. And I said, no, I refuse to accept that. He's okay. He's going to be back. And I didn't say how or anything else. I just put that thought out in the universe in the same way, with the same affection that I felt for that animal and the same intent that I was going to help another fellow being. And it's very hard to do because, you know, you always have a certain amount of doubt about just how much you can do. But as God is my witness, I no sooner did that than the dog walked up to me on the dock. And I was flabbergasted. And he was shaking himself off, and he was just happy and normal, except that he was wet. And where he appeared a couple of feet from me was a big puddle. And I figured, how the heck did he get up here? And I went back and looked, and there was absolutely no wet footprints, no sign of water coming down the dock. You know, I could never explain where he came from, except that there was help from another source. And that really affected me after that. It just completely changed my belief in what you can do and what you can't do. Now, it's a hard story to believe, and you may choose to think that I was drinking that day or something, but the fact of the matter is that's exactly how it happened, and it really had a profound effect on the way I view reality. So, Don, what did you want to interject?
Well, first of all, those are two great stories, both within the realm of my experience, maybe not exactly under the same circumstances, but certainly exactly what you're talking about. And there is nothing strange or unusual about what you are describing when one taps into the heart center, when one taps into this infinite ocean of energy and consciousness that is available to us, because it makes us superhuman in our nature. We are really created in the image of God, the Creator. And as a result, when we do open up to that power and begin to use that power without fear and without any anticipation or anxiety that it's hopeless or it's meaningless or it won't work, it does just what we expect it to do. Now, you had touched upon basically the life forms on Earth. You had described the animals, the flora, and you described the minerals. And when we think of man's vision and what we're taught by science in general, and here I am telling a scientist how science is taught, but I have my metaphysical views of where science errs, and I think you and I probably agree with those. We've talked about these before in private and on this show. we're in a three-dimensional world, okay? What we learn in mathematics or what we learn in science is that one dimension is a dot on a piece of paper. And two dimensions are a series of dots connected to each other, which make a line or a circle or some object. It could be a squiggly line. As long as we keep the pencil on the paper and keep moving, it really doesn't matter. That's considered two-dimensional. The third dimension would be where we intersect lines that move out into space outside of the domain of those two dimensions and give a holographic symmetry to an object, gives it volume. And we usually describe those as cubes or pyramids or spheres as opposed to circles and squares and triangles. That's the average person's concept of what a three-dimensional world is. Yet this planet has three dimensions, and there is a spiritual hierarchy that flows with those three dimensions. One dimension doesn't necessarily mean a lack of intelligence, or two dimensions doesn't mean there is a lack of intelligence, because each dimension exists for a purpose. You can't have three dimensions without two, and you can't have two dimensions without one. So the first dimension is the center or the heart of the Earth. Some say it's nuclear in nature. Some say it's just pure consciousness and giving off heat and giving off energy that supports the other dimensions that are a part of the planet. We have the minerals, which are also referred to as elementals, and there are various kinds. Even outside the mineral realm, there are things that live outside of the realm of the first dimension, but understand and interact with the first dimension, but they're separate, much like the people on the surface in the third dimension, on the surface of the planet, are interacting with those first two dimensions. We require the second dimension minerals in our food to sustain our bodies. And we require that energy of the first dimension to sustain life. You could say that the first dimension is the life force of the planet Earth. The second dimension is a reflection of that life force, which supports the other three-dimensional aspects. Now, when we bring those things in the Earth outside to the surface, we put them right there in the third dimension with us. We remove many of the things that were not intended to be removed from the second dimension. And then on the surface, we have a bunch of three-dimensional people who are living two-dimensional or one-dimensional lives. And I don't mean necessarily on a spiritual level. In terms of the lack of consciousness and the programming that goes on through education and all the religious dogma that we're exposed to, consciousness is limited because it forces us to have what Christopher Holmes talked about on the show last week, or was it the week before? 2 weeks ago, on the 6th, I think, he talked about the heart mind as opposed to the head mind. And that's a topic you and I have talked about. So there is a metaphysical component. There is a spiritual component to each aspect of this three-dimensionality. So we have to get away from putting physical limitations of experience upon the application of spiritual concepts. Consciousness is, what does it look like? Can you hold it in your hand? You and I would probably say, no, you can't hold it in your hand, but you can hold things that have consciousness in your hand. Certainly, you can pick up a stone, and I've met many people in my lifetime, and you have too, and that stone's got more consciousness in it than most of the people that I've met, because it's in tune with what it is. It knows what it is, and it exists for a purpose, and we may not understand the purpose, but because we lack the consciousness doesn't keep the stone from knowing it's a stone. or a piece of gold, or a flower, or a seed, or some kind of fish, or a fish egg, or a paramecium. It doesn't matter what we call the thing or the shape that it's in. It knows what it is, and as long as we don't interfere with it, it follows the laws of nature. It's when man interferes with that consciousness, and when I say interfere, trying to destroy it, trying to hold it back, let's say.
Or redirect it in an unnatural way.
Yes, to keep it, I was going to say, to keep it from being what it's supposed to be. What we experience in our reality then is a whole new set of circumstances that we have to overcome because we're going about the process in the wrong way. I don't know if I'm making myself clear because this is a very deep topic. We could spend hours and hours on that. That aspect.
No, I think you're making yourself very clear. As a matter of fact, we talked about that very thing only maybe 2-3 weeks ago. With regard to what happens when you remove something or extract something from the gestalt or the total matrix that it was designed to be in, that you automatically alter its abilities. Well, I think I used the analogy of the rabbit, that if he's out in the wilderness somewhere, he only eats stuff that's good for him, yet there could be various types of poisonous plants around, like hemlock or something like that. You don't see him eating it by mistake. And yet, if you take that rabbit and you cage him and you break that continuity with his environment, with his nature, you can take the very hemlock plant that he doesn't normally pay any attention to, chop it up and put it in his food bowl, and he'll eat it and die. Because the contact is broken, the consciousness is altered, the intent has been foiled, and that's exactly what I believe you're trying to build upon. And we're all victims of that in this world, because
yes.
The people who have designed what we live in today have purposely engineered it for their particular ends, not God's, not ours, and certainly not nature's, but for their own ends. And
mm-hmm.
That's the reason why all these people run around like disorganized zombies, is because they are. And
yeah.
The only way that you can break that cycle is by doing something that gets you out of the loop.
Yes, I agree. Now, taking that exercise that we propose to people, of course, I've been doing this for many, many years, so it's not something that I had to practice, but I found it quite ironic that three events in the weather presented themselves to me over the past week, which enabled me to participate in the very exercise, but in a totally different way. I had gotten a call from Dr. Mike Castle about a heavy weather storm that was coming my way, and I looked at the Doppler radar images of this, and it was a very ferocious looking storm. And I told him what I was going to do. I said, well, it's not going to hit here. I'm just going to go outside and command the weather to move in a different direction. And I sent it off where it couldn't do any damage. And I got some short time later, I got a call from him explaining to me what the weatherman said about this weather system and what had happened. And I went and I looked at the radar while I was talking to him, and I just cracked up with laughter, because the storm that I had seen, which was the largest part of this whole system of storms that were coming over a three-state line at a 45-degree angle, basically moving east, a big section of it that was going to hit my area actually moved north and out of the way. And we had tornado warnings. And this happened a couple of times this week. They blew the sirens for several hours because tornadoes had been spotted to the west of where I live. And again, I just made a proclamation. No big deal. It was quite simple what I said. Actually, it was even funny. I was talking to the storm system as if it was some lower kind of being. And I sensed that the system probably had been created with HAARP. And so, it stopped. The weather stopped. And actually, last night, we were hit again with a series of thunderstorms. And I basically commanded the storms to not strike. I welcomed the rain, because we can always use the rain in moderate amounts. But the lightning was destructive in nature. It was very intense. And I saw it as an intrusion. So I did affect that. Now, that's possible. I get email from people telling me that they've been able to manipulate the clouds. They've been working on chemtrails. And we can all see the difference of the blue skies. There are many things at work right now on different levels. And that's an example of just using our consciousness. So if anyone thinks the story about the puppy is strange, this is every bit as strange to the average person. But when you are used to communicating with nature on that level, and you can feel and understand, it's like you said, Jim, there's a knowing that takes place, the familiarity with it. And it's not like I do this all the time. I just decided I'm tired of putting up with destructive weather. And when I sense or hear that there's going to be something approaching, I deal with it. That's taking responsibility. See,
I agree with you. And, and storms and puppies are not the limit. You know, people have to get that idea out of their minds that we're limited. The things we're limited to are the ones we accept, the limits that we accept.
Yes. Now, Jim, if I can beg your permission to play something for the listening audience, and I'm going to play something where there's a man who's dealing with an issue. It's a major issue that has a lot of people in this country and around the world very concerned. And the speech that he's about to give, it's about 10 minutes here. But it's important for people to listen, because this is the spiritual side of this topic that's got many, many people throughout this country enthralled. It's got their attention. People are anxious. Some people are fearful. Certainly some are very angry and wonder what can be done. And just like the things that we're talking about, that are ways that people can verify for themselves that what we're saying is real and God-given. This isn't anything to be afraid of or to judge that somehow it's evil. You're going to hear this man, Reverend James David Manning, talk about evil. And if I can do that, Jim? I think
that would be a perfect thing for you to do at this point, because the next little section that I wanted to talk about, I think, would sit very nicely on that foundation. So go right ahead.
All right, here we go.
Barack Hussein, the long-legged Mac Daddy Obama, is, without a doubt, the most powerful man that has ever lived. We have never in the history of our nation experienced a man with such power as we now see flowing so freely through the strength, the charism, the intellect, and the oration of Barack Hussein, the long-legged Mac Daddy Obama. He is indeed, without a doubt, a flawless man, but a man also without a soul. And that is the one opportunity we have, and the one reason that I speak to you at this hour, that he does not have a soul. Now, please listen to me, for I know many of you would love to run away from this truth. But let me repeat. There has never been a man in world or global politics as powerful as Barack Hussein, the long-legged Mac Daddy Obama. Please. He is indeed an emissary of the devil. He is the son of Satan. There is no doubt he comes from another kingdom. Only a few more of his power plays, and you too will be convinced. However, I have been sent to warn you, as I started 2 years ago, warning the world about this emissary, this son of Satan, this man from a very dark kingdom, Barack Hussein Obama. Let me state this to all Americans and even to members of the global community. You cannot stop Obama with the ballot or the vote. To look forward to November or to 2012 as a way of redressing and regaining our nation is foolish at best. There is no way. You can usurp or overturn the powers that this man possesses. At present, he now owns the souls of the courts, U.S. Supreme Court, the Congress, the churches, and the media. They belong to him. They shall never live again as long as he now lives. He owns their souls. They cannot express life outside of his commitment to allow them the freedom to live. We must also realize that God has sent me. Almighty God has sent me to warn you. Now, I have a word that I'd like to speak unto you. We have an open door set before us at present in the upcoming trial where Columbia University will indeed be demonstrated to have acted in a fraudulent way, a felonious way, a way that represents both sedition and treason against this nation. In the book of Revelation of the Holy Bible, it states, and God is speaking to the church at Philadelphia, that I have set before you an open door, and no man can shut it. And we must now recognize that we cannot overthrow the power of Obama through the ballot, through Tea Party protesting, or any march on Washington. We must walk through the open door that God has set in Columbia University, for they can be easily convicted. I am asking you to join with me in a 7-day march around the university called Columbia here in the community of Harlem while the trial will proceed starting on the 14th of May, the year of our Lord, 2010. Each morning, before I open up the doors of the courtroom and start the trial, I will lead a march around the University of Columbia. And on the 7th day, we will march 7 times, as Joshua did in the Bible against the city of Jericho. And I speak to you now, as thus saith the Lord, on the 7th day, the walls will come tumbling down, and this soulless individual, this emissary of the devil that's now in our world and before our nation, will indeed be brought low, and the appropriate punishment will then be assigned. We cannot expect the courts, the Congress, the church, or the media to act on our behalf. We must take the biblical, spiritual, moral road of Almighty God. This is the only hope that we have. is to believe in God, believe his word, that the prophecy of Jesus, that we now are looking at a false Messiah, one who cannot be stopped through constitutional powers, congressional powers, or the legislations of the courts now established. We must take this to the court of God. And he has given me this word that to appeal to you, one and all, that all Americans would make the effort and sacrifice to come to the city of New York and join in a 7-day march around the university called Columbia. And each day before the trial begins, we will march and then start the trial, present the evidence. And on the 7th day, we will march 7 times, and God will restore to us the victory. I repeat unto you that Obama cannot be stopped. Do not waste any more time appealing to the ballot or the vote or listening to those in the media telling you that November is the time to remember. The Lord God Almighty has given me one other warning that I must alert you of, and that is this. Obama is destined for world dictatorship. He is now eyeing all of the nations of the world to bring them under his collective power, and that he will give glory to Satan, and we will be the prisoners of his power and of his madness. If we do not stop him with this 7-day march and this trial that will convict him, we must demonstrate to the American people, we can show this one opportunity, this man who is most mysterious, where he came from, where he has been, we don't know. We cannot find out. He has used his powers to seal all records. There is but one opportunity, and God has opened that door called Columbia University, which will give us the opportunity to convict. And then we must warn the world of who this man is. We must not allow him to leave the shores of America and spread his global tentacle powers and bring all of the world under darkness and madness as he desires, that he might destroy the kingdom of God and the word of God. I call on all of you that you might hear me. I ask you to take the time to pray. Many of you would love to run away and just dismiss the things that I say as if it is not true. But just think, have you ever seen anyone demonstrate the power that Obama is demonstrating? Have you ever seen any president? Have you ever seen any leader with the kind of strength and mystery and awe that this man possesses? And one final question. Do you believe that he has been sent by God, or do you believe he has been sent by the kingdom of darkness? I appeal to you, one and all. I appeal to you. Join me. March May the 14th. We will march May the 14th. For 7 days, we will march around the University of Columbia here in Harlem, New York. And on the 7th day, we will march 7 times. While the trial proceeds, the guilty verdict will be rendered, and God will give unto us the victory. I'm James David Manning.
Now, Jim, and ladies and gentlemen, a lot of you cannot go to New York. These proceedings that Dr. Manning was referring to actually began Friday morning, the 14th. But we can send those involved in this very, very important event all the love all the wisdom and the energy of the truth. We can send our hearts out to this man who is making a great sacrifice, if that's the word, by taking responsibility into his own hands to confront that which is obviously the dichotomy, the opposite of the creation. What is going on in America today is destructive. We've talked about many of the things that you can focus on to bring a change about. And you do that by operating through your heart, connecting with this unseen energy that's there that gives life to everything on this planet. And while you think about the fact that there is that which gives life to everything on this planet, and that there are those in many smaller numbers who are taking life away from this planet, who are destroying life on the planet, polluting our food, our water, our skies, and now our oceans with oil. And they say, oh, maybe in a couple of months, this blowout, which they keep referring to as an oil spill. It's not a spill. They're spewing oil under thousands of pounds of pressure per square foot. They're spewing it into the oceans, poisoning the waters, killing all the life in the seas. Not to mention the livelihood. These people only know how to talk about this in terms of whether they're gaining money, they're gaining profit, or they're losing money. There's not been any discussion about the life forms that are being killed, which we are dependent upon. So for most of us, even for myself, it's not practical for me to go to New York at this time. I wish that I could. But I can be there in spirit, and I was today. And you can be too. This is another thing that we can do. It's a small thing. It doesn't cost you a red cent to do that. Jim, your comments on Reverend Manning's speech there.
Well, naturally, I agree with what the man is saying. And it's not only Obama himself, although he is definitely the tip of the iceberg, but, you know, we're up against an entire regime of evil, and it has been manifesting on this world for thousands of years, and now with this guy's energy and this guy's intent, it's coming to some kind of a head. Now, you can sit back and wait and see what happens, but he's no different than a chemtrail or a cloud or a puppy on a dock. If you have the intention and the willpower and the purity of heart, there's no reason why he can't be bombarded from every person in this country simultaneously, and it will definitely make a change in what's going on. Now, before we run out of time, Don, there's something I really would like to say about, which ties right in with the message that Reverend gave, and also it's sort of a culmination of what we said previously.
Yes, be my guest, Jim.
There are three ways that we can go through life. And before I get into those three things, brief as they are, I want to make sure that I emphasize the fact that free will is the most important thing for us to understand. People have a tendency, because of the rose-colored descriptions that are given in various religious teachings, to look upon God as a being which is, all good, all knowing, all loving, all caring, all this type of stuff. But we do that because it's a reflection of our personal needs. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's the way he is. And the question that we need to ask is, can God promote evil? And if not, then how does black magic really work? Well, it's important to know this in order for you to understand what I'm about to say, because it's all about free will. The universe needs to be looked upon as an enormous volume of potential energy, which can be accessed by anyone for any purpose. Because of the gift of free will, if you choose to do evil with that power, it isn't God that's being evil. He's allowing you to do it because of the fact that he gave you another gift, the gift of free will, and you are responsible for everything that you do. So, with that in mind, I'm going to give you three examples of how we can go through life. Most people go through life relatively uninvolved. And what I mean by that is they tend to their own business, they do their best to survive, you know, they have families, they do all these different things, but for the most part, they are completely uninteractive with what's going on around them. And the reason that is the reason why we're in this mess. Because if we were vigilant and if we were interactive, you know, the kind of scum that's now smeared all over our planet wouldn't be there. But it's too late to worry about that. Now, there's two other ways to go through life. Anybody that's watched science fiction or, you know, various types of drama or read Shakespeare or, you know, or Dante's Inferno or any of those more interesting writings will certainly be familiar with the idea of selling your soul to Satan. Now, what that really means, of course, is that you go through life with total disregard for anybody and everything but yourself and your immediate aims, and you use the very teachings that we're talking about to promote evil and to magnify the intent that you have to dominate others and to do as much evil in the world as you can get away with. That's selling your soul to the devil. You're making use of the powers of the universe in a perverted manner, and that's why it's wrong, and that's why it's black magic. Now, the thing that's interesting is most people never get to this point, but it's so important to consider. And that is that if you can sell your soul to the powers of darkness, did you ever realize that you can sell your soul to God? That's a real important thing to consider, friends, because most people go through life completely isolated from what's going on, and they just kind of take a wait-and-see attitude. But if you sell your soul to the divine, that's putting yourself in a totally different situation. And basically what it means is that from the pure intent of an innocent heart, you literally speak to the universe and say, let me be an agent of good for you on this earth. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have a personal life. It doesn't mean that you don't do anything except what you're told, or however you want to interpret it. What it means is that if you really and sincerely make that pledge or make that bond with the divine, you will suddenly become aware of a task. I don't know what it is, but each of us has one. And that task will then become your paramount reason for living. And if you are sincere about accepting that responsibility, it will change your life. Teachers will appear when you need them. Things will happen that will totally amaze you. And you will begin to blaze through this world doing things that you never thought were possible. And this is the kind of dedication, this is the kind of forcefulness, and this is the kind of charity and purpose that we need to have collectively right now. And as the preacher said, You may not be able to go to New York, but you can affect the situation. That's the mechanism to use. Find out what it is you're here to do. Apply yourself diligently with the total amount of faith and purity of intent, and leave the details up to the universe. Because I assure you, if you do nothing, the folks on the other side will take advantage of it to the nth degree, just as they have up until now. It's time to use fire to fight fire, and it's time to stop thinking in a limited way and realize that you can use the same power that's being used against you to change this world into the paradise that God intended it to be. That's about all I got to say, Don.
Jim, I couldn't say it better myself. In fact, I couldn't say it that well. I'm lost for words. You've said it all.
Well, it's true, Don. That is the real truth. That is the way that we need to handle this thing. And we have to start to be cognizant of all our gifts, not just our physical looks or our intelligence, but also the spiritual gifts and the abilities that came along with life on this world, because they're right there. It's just a shame that they're being ignored.
Yes. Well, I want to reiterate your suggestion. We can pray for this man, Reverend James David Manning. We can pray for our country and this mission he is on to reveal the truth about this usurper that we have in Washington, D.C. Washington, the District of Columbia, and Columbia University. You see, their magic, their black magic is worked into the names, folks. And this goes way back. It touches upon my research as well. Dwight David Eisenhower was the secret president of Columbia University for 5 years. Very few people know that. And this is the same movement that was occurring in the early 1950s. Same thing. There's nothing different about it. They just have a lot more technology at their disposal right now. But at the same time, there's an awakening occurring throughout the universe. This isn't the only place. It's at the lowest ebb here on this planet compared to anywhere else on the universe. And evil is everywhere. But so is goodness. And we can focus on extending our love, sending our love, our personal power, our universal power that we have within us, if we do some soul searching. If you want to see change, those of you in the listening audience who have been saying, what can we do? Tell us what we can do. We see the problems now. We understand how it was done. What can we do? That's what Jim Murray and I talked about on tonight's show as well as on last week's show, but we got to the heart of the matter tonight. We've explained very clearly, and Jim, in his closing comment, described life from beginning to end in about a minute. Jim, I want to thank you for a wonderful show tonight and your wisdom and insight, and I look forward to your next appearance next Friday on Evident Footprints, and I wish you the best weekend of your life.
Well, thank you, Don. I hope to be back with you next weekend, and let's see if we can't do a follow-up show that's even more energizing.
Okay, you got it. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Mr. Jim Murray. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and blogtalkradio.com on the Internet. Also, I'd like to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be none other than Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.